Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your final round recap of the Safeway Open. And joining me to break it all down, it's Greg Ducharme. Greg, happy Sunday. Happy first Sunday of the season. Oh, by the way, happy week one of the NFL. Did you catch any football today?
I caught a little bit. Not a whole lot, honestly. I wish I had a chance to catch more. But yeah, interesting week in the fantasy football world. I don't know if you saw that. I thought I had a great team and they perform really well, but it looks like I'm gonna lose week one. So that's the an added pain to my life. But the golf was great to watch today too.
Yeah, I had a red zone on, and I, from what I understand, like every big name player scored like 2 touchdowns. So like Everybody was just going nuts today, right?
It was crazy. I mean, it was Davante Adams that seems to have gotten me today, but then you had Adam Thielen too. I mean, the team I went up against seems to have they had quite a day, which I thought I did too. So hey, this is the world we live in.
Luckily, only counts as one loss, Greg. Plenty of weeks to go. How about this? Our best bets for the Safeway Open went 3-4-3. So $100 wagers would have cashed in over $500. You can get that cheat sheet that we tweet out from at First Cut Pod on Twitter and Instagram. The one thing we didn't have, Greg, though, Stuart Scott, who used to be the ESPN anchor. Stuart Sink wins the Safeway Open. Did not see that coming. He goes out rounds of 67, 70, 65, and 65 to capture his 7th PGA Tour victory. We'll dive into some of the stats, but like your reaction, 11 years between victories here.
So this is the – I feel like you and I have talked about this, Rick. I feel like with Stuart Sink, he's in that age where it's no man's land. You're a little too you. There's such a big difference between what you can do and what the young 20 somethings can do. When you go and try to compete with a Matthew Wolf or a Bryson, you know, a Justin Thomas, these guys maybe who are they're not rookies, but they're maybe a little more polished. You start going up against them, and you feel like you're kind of on the other side, and it almost feels like you're just waiting for them to get to the PGA Tour champions.
Yep.
Or so we thought, because he played awesome today. And it was great to watch. He stepped up and hit shots. The tee shots he was hitting were magnificent. It was great to see, because he was swinging really well. And I've always enjoyed watching that swing.
Yeah, this is interesting. This is kind of when you're and not for Stuart Sink, obviously, with this victory, but like you get whipped for like the last 3 years on the PGA Tour. Then you get on the PGA Tour champions and you're like the odds on favorite every single week. Like when Stuart Sink turns 50, he's going to dominate the PGA Tour champions and he's going to make a lot of noise. But here we go. 11 years between victories, reminiscent of what Ches Reavie did. Was that last year, the year before? He went 11 years between victories, which is just a testament to kind of what we talked about last night with Cameron Percy, staying relevant, keeping your card, finding a way to get back in contention. And then when you do get back into contention, closing it out. Like that's a pretty impressive feat to win twice over an 11-year span, whether you won in between or not.
You know, it's interesting you say that. Because you think about Stuart Sink, and I'm watching him coming down the stretch, and my thought is, well, he's won before. I mean, he's won 6 times on the PGA Tour. This guy knows how to get the job done. And he almost, in a funny way, has an advantage, because it's clear that he's not at a distance disadvantage, right? Once he gets to the back nine, my thought process is, well, he can still reach 16 and 18. So at this point, the age is just literally just a number. There's no real disadvantage. It's not like there's a par five where you got to carry it over water and the rough's really thick. And no, you put the ball in the fairway, you hit good shots, you're going to have the same chances as everybody else. So once it got to that point, the tide kind of turned, and he was able to put the ball in the fairway a lot, very often. He was hammered. I mean, 11 of 14 fairways on Sunday, which it was huge.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think he missed one. I think he missed one on the back, one fairway on the back. So even when he had to step up there under pressure, as he was, you know, as it was becoming clear that he was in the lead and he was in contention, still did not wilt, which you never know what's going to happen when you're, you know, 47 years old, 11 years between victories. Are you going to wilt on a Sunday? And what was really cool, Greg, he had a son on the back. Which is spectacular. And there was so much great audio because there was no fans out there. It was almost like Stuart Sink was talking Reagan, his son, through caddying. They were helping each other. Like, the convo was phenomenal.
It's always a great story. But again, this speaks to that no man's land kind of territory. It's not very often you see a father and son caddying for one another and end up winning, especially when the father's playing. That's typically something you see when guys are on their way out and it's a celebratory walk, or, you know, it's kind of in the twilight. And as you said, you're showing them the ropes, give them an experience. Maybe they need a summer job or something. But it's not often you see the son on the bag for the eventual winner. So it was great to see, and watching Stuart kind of talk his way through these shots. Reagan's a soundboard at that point, a sounding board. And I feel like Stuart really was able to talk his way through the shots and just get a little bit of confidence. But ultimately, I mean, these were Stuart's decisions, and he was able to stick with them and make great swings down the stretch.
Reagan better make sure the old man cuts him that 10% check.
Yeah, for the I was thinking about that.
Payday for the kid. I love it. Harry Higgs finished solo second here. And, you know, there was a couple of moments, you know, obviously he goes out, he shoots the 62 in round two, which includes the albatross on his final hole. So we've been talking about him all weekend. We talk a lot, Greg, about margins and what the margins are from the Korn Ferry to the PGA, from keeping your card, from player 100 to player 70, even smaller for Harry Higgs, who gets onto 16T after making bogey on 15, and he hits a ball dangerously left off the tee that, quite honestly, I mean, it takes a couple of hops off of the cart path, could have easily gone left into the hazard. He could easily be hitting his third from up there, gets a favorable bounce, gets to take relief from the cart path, and then just hits an absolute seed to 3 feet and taps it in essentially for eagle. Like, that could have been a bogey. It could have been worse. It turns into an eagle. Like, that was inches to keep him in the contention of this thing.
You're absolutely right. And it's amazing the kind of breaks that you get. And it's funny, it kind of came back to him on 17, the putt you say you hit on 17, it looks like it has to go in.
Yeah.
And it just dives off at the end. And you wonder if that's just kind of the game balancing itself out. But that putt was exactly 5 feet, 4 inches. But when you, Rick, look at Harry Higgs, I mean, were you pulling for him? Do you feel like Stuart Sink in his last two wins is a heartbreaker? Are the fans pulling for Harry Higgs, you think?
The fans are definitely pulling for Harry Higgs. I have to admit, I'm kind of lukewarm on him. Like, sometimes I think it's like really cool. Sometimes I'm like, all right, this is a little much. Like, I don't know. I like him, don't love him. I don't know anything about him other than the shtick that we see. But I know that the fan base is very large for Harry Higgs. They like the deep V. They like the way that he just goes out there and lets it fly. Like, there's a lot of things to like about him. But no, I was pulling for Stuart Sink. I really liked the story of Sink having his son on the bag, his wife being there. It's 11 years since. I thought that was a really cool story. I was completely cool with seeing Sink win this thing.
I was really surprised to see that it was 11 years ago. Really surprised me. So I'm with you. I like the guy so much. And I love watching that golf swing. And I felt like there was a point last year where I felt like Stuart Sink was starting to play some really good golf. And then it kind of fell off again. And it's been a little bit you know, it hasn't been stellar. It hasn't been a guy that you're saying, like, I don't know. When you watch a tournament like this, do you look back afterwards and say, did I miss something here in my pre-tournament analysis? Should I have picked Stuart Cink to win this week? Because for me, I look at him and I say, well, it's a great story, but there's no way I could have picked him to win this week.
Not weeks like this. I mean, we, like, PGA Championship, I feel like, was the last time I was like, did we just miss Morikawa? Like, did we just whiff on that? I mean, like, or me personally, where we know he's going to pound a bunch of fairways. We know he's going to hit his irons beautifully. Like, that's a situation. We literally said this week, 80 guys can win this golf tournament. Stuart Cink certainly falls within that. We knew it was wide open. I'm not kicking anybody, especially myself, for not getting Stuart Cink, a guy who hasn't won in 11 years, not on our cards.
Yeah, it's a very fair point.
The guy I was rooting for, and I guess I was rooting for a collapse from everybody else, is Doc Redman, friend of the pod, who goes out and fires a 62 and posts the clubhouse lead essentially before the final group even got started. So we knew this was unlikely to hold at 18 under. But this is the kind of stuff that Doc can do with his ball striking ability. We're seeing his game mature more and more. And if you needed, you know, an exclamation point on a 10 under round that matched the lowest round of the week, he finished with 6 straight birdies, Greg, which is like the guy who's like, let me play 9 more. I might, like, how deep can I go here?
Yeah, that's he's not afraid of holding his breath. That's what he said. I mean, yeah. To make 6 birdies in a row is, there's something that comes over you. It's hard to stay in the moment and just play the next shot and play the next shot. I know you have 2 par fives in there, and there are definitely birdie opportunities, which he clearly took advantage of. But it's hard to take advantage of all of those in a row, especially when you feel like you got a chance at winning. Like you said, how low can you go? But the ball striking today was ridiculous. The iron play was ridiculous. He led the field in proximity today and strokes gained approach, which it's not too hard to figure that out, but he hit 17 of 18 greens. His proximity was 16 feet 4 inches for the whole round. So I mean, give yourself 18 putts from 16 feet. How many are you going to make? There's a good chance you're going to make a few.
He hit his approach on 13 to 11 feet. He hit his approach on 14 to 8. He hit his tee shot, which is a par 3, 15 to 11 inches. He birdied the par 5, 16th. His approach on 17 was 3 feet 3 inches, and then he birdied 18, the par 5 coming in. Like, yeah, dialed. Absolutely dialed.
Dialed. It's one of those, you wish this didn't happen on Sunday. Well, that's actually kind of goes both ways. I'd love to get your thoughts on this. If you're Doc Redman, do you wish this happened on Saturday or Sunday?
Oh, man, good question. We'll have to have him on. We'll have to ask him. Yeah. You know, in the world of they all count, right? They all count for yeah. This week. I do wonder if he is just licking his chops thinking, oh, get me to winged foot. Right, like let me see if I can continue this at a major championship. I don't know. It would be a really good question for this week. Obviously, it doesn't matter, but there might be bigger things ahead for Mr. Redmond.
I have a funny feeling the experience of hunting flags next week is going to be a little different than it was this week.
You don't think there's 6 straight birdies on the card next week?
Well, I guess we'll see. But no, there's no way. I mean, it's just the. We'll see what happens with the greens. If the greens get soft, you could make 6 birdies in a row. Very unlikely, but you could if the greens are soft. But I don't think they will be.
I don't think so either. The aforementioned Ches Reavie, the other guy, 11 years between wins. Oh, by the way, finds himself on the first page of the leaderboard, finishes in a tie for third with 2 rounds of 66 on the weekend. And he came in quite a flurry, Greg. He comes in 29 to shoot that 66 on Sunday. He's not really, you know, we kind of look ahead to the U.S. Open, right? We kind of look ahead to winged foot, and he's not the prototypical guy that finds success at difficult golf courses because he's not very long off the tee. But with the emphasis on finding the fairway, Reavie has had a good run at U.S. Opens in the last 3 years. Now he's playing well. I mean, it's kind of interesting what's brewing here.
It is interesting. He's becoming a player you can really count on. He's becoming much more consistent as a player, and his driving accuracy is it's really impressive. When he gets, this is the funny thing about Echezrivi, and this is what most people don't understand about tour players. You think of a guy who's not that long off the tee, a guy who's going to hit fairways, plod his way around. You think they aren't going to make a lot of birdies. You think they aren't going to have the ability to go low, to use fantasy football terms. You've been hearing these all day. Well, what's his floor? What's his ceiling? And you think of Echezrivi as having maybe a pretty high floor, but not a very high ceiling. And he shows you today making 7 birdies on the back nine that he can flirt. He can make a ton of birdies. He makes them in bunches. What I find so interesting is he said last year with his win at the Travelers, he said he actually got more conservative, and playing more conservative allowed him to, in a strange way, to shoot lower scores, but he was still able to make a lot of birdies. So I found it interesting. I guess today there was a lot of opportunity for him to go. He was 6 in proximity today, hitting 15 of 18 greens. But the guy is very underrated, in my opinion.
For sure. I do want to make a quick correction. Doc Redman not in the U.S. Open field next week. So he's definitely not going to be making 6 birdies in a row or 6 birdies at all. So we'll wait and see where he tees it up next.
Man, I wouldn't try to play a money game with him. I'm busy, Doc.
I'm busy, yeah. Yeah. Shout out to Akshay Bhatia. We talked about him on Saturday evening's pod after round 3. He makes a birdie on 18 to get himself into the top 10, which is going to get him into Corrales Punta Cana. And he knew it, Greg, right? He gave it a fist pump on 18 when he made that putt. I think he knew that was a big one.
Yeah, you love to see it. A couple of things with Akshay. I mean, you're talking about this is your first cut that you've made on the PGA Tour. And yeah, Now you're contending for a top 10. Even if it doesn't get you into the next event, it gives you confidence. Okay, if you're Akshay, hey, I can play out here. I can do this. People have been, I would say, very critical of Akshay and the route that he's gone, choosing not to go to college for at least a year. He's definitely taken some heat for it, and you'd love to see him kind of prove everybody wrong. And look, it's not a win, and this doesn't mean that it's the right or the wrong decision by any means. But if you're Akshay, in your own head, you're saying, yeah, I was right. I knew it. And now I just showed it. And now next week or in the next tournament, I'm going to go out and do the exact same thing again.
And that Punta Cana event this year, and I don't know what its status is moving forward, that's a regular tour event. That is no longer an alternate field event, right? So, I mean, this is even, I don't know what kind of field it's going to attract, but this is a very important, that's going to be a very important start for him.
Just off the top of my head, I think they made this a full FedEx Cup point stop before all this happened, before the schedule change. I could have it mixed up with a different opposite field event, but I'm pretty sure this one entered pre-COVID was going to be a regular stop. So interesting to see, but yeah, important.
Important indeed. Let's take a peek ahead to the U.S. Open, because we did get a little bit of breaking news on Sunday. And unfortunately, what we find out, Scottie Scheffler has withdrawn. He tested positive for COVID-19. He is out for the U.S. Open, which is not only unfortunate because the tour was on a really good run of no positive tests, but it's also really, really unfortunate for Scottie, who has been playing so well, Greg. He was trending in the right direction. He contended at the PGA Championship. He played great at the Tour Championship. He was probably so stoked to get to Winged Foot and be able to compete, and it's not going to happen.
It's extremely disappointing. I feel so bad for him, because you're right. We've been on this great run, and this was something that everybody kind of hypothesized about before we returned to golf. Well, what's going to happen when a big star has to miss an event, when somebody has to withdraw, when we had all these hypotheticals going on, and none of them happened. We got through this scot-free. No, nothing happened. I mean, you had Brooks choosing to withdraw from an event because his caddy got it, and it happened to Webb too. But they came back right away. And played great, and we kind of like got away with it. And now, unfortunately for Scotty, he's going to have to miss it. So I feel really bad for him. But still, it's amazing that this is the first positive test in a long time. I mean, it is. It's almost like you could forget about it if all you did was follow the PGA Tour.
Yeah, that's true. I wonder if this will be kind of, I don't want to call it a wake-up call. The tour has been, I mean, knock on wood, has been excellent in this restart. I think better than any of us could have even imagined this has gone. But you wonder if it sends not shockwaves, but just a little bit of, oh, okay, this is still something we've got to be very careful about. We want to make sure that we can contend and compete in these events. Brandon Grace is actually going to replace him. So that spot is going to be filled. Brandon Grace will take Scotty Scheffler's spot. And I don't know if this is a full circle thing, but in 2020, I mean, Grace was the previous player to the last player to test positive for COVID. It was 6 weeks ago.
Well, my hope is that it is a full circle and this closes the circle. So, I mean, that's all that I can hope for. But we'll see. I mean, look, Scotty's going to have a lot of US Opens to contend in. You don't know how many of them are going to be at Wingfoot, which is why I really feel for him. But he's going to be fine. He's going to have a lot of opportunities.
Little international news. Tommy Fleetwood, who's been known to make a little bit of noise at the U.S. Open, finishes T3 at the Portugal Masters, and our buddy Justin Ray had a really great stat that has me drooling a little bit, Greg. Tommy Fleetwood gained 17.7 strokes from tee to green in that event, which was 5.7 more than anyone else. I understand it's a Eurofield event. I am trying not to get too hot and bothered by this, but with Tommy Fleetwood's ball striking prowess that we know and his history at US Opens, you've got to start considering him as a viable option for next week.
I wouldn't sleep on him. I mean, look, that means it means he's confident, if nothing else. You can look at that number any way you want. Yeah, it's a weak field, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. What that does say is he's hitting it really well. And when Tommy Fleetwood gets on difficult golf courses, I think to Le Golf National at Paris, and he was dominant because of long and straight drives, and he continues to do that. And when you get to more difficult golf courses, it tends to suit Tommy Fleetwood's game even better because it rewards length and precision, and he has both, and he has both. He's not lacking by any means, so he's definitely someone you don't want to sleep on.
If you've got a little hankering for Tommy Fleetwood, he is 30-1 via our friends at William Hill at the moment. Greg, I want to talk a little bit about the ANA inspiration, and we've got to go through our odds and ends, which includes our matchup challenge and our one and done. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners. It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there. And I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Did you know more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Spoiler alert, your feet don't have to hurt. And I know foot biomechanics can be complex, but solving foot pain should be simple. It's a signature orthotic shape of the Superfeet insoles that give you the comfort and support where you need it the most. It redistributes and reduces stress and strain on your entire body. Think about those long walks on a golf course and how uncomfortable your feet can get. Well, they don't have to. And Superfeet has helped millions of people worldwide experience the life-changing magic of comfy, pain-free feet. When your feet feel good, so do you. It is one of the most important parts of your overall health and well-being. And for a limited time, Superfeet is having its biggest sale of the year. Go to superfeet.com to save 25% off site-wide and get free shipping. Hurry, sale pricing ends June 5th. And we're back. I found myself tuning in to the ANA inspiration, Greg, because I knew things were heating up and things were getting interesting on Twitter, and I flip over to see what the ladies are up to. And, you know, the headline, Miriam Lee goes out and wins the ANA inspiration. She chipped in three times in her final rounds and twice over the last three holes. That's pretty timely, Greg. If you're ever going to do it, I would recommend it in a big-time event.
If you haven't spent a lot of time watching the LPGA Tour, I mean, try to find some time to do it because they are immensely talented. And I've had a chance to spend a little time with a number of the players out there, and they're so good, especially around the greens. It's not surprising to hear about those chip-ins because I've seen it in practice from many LPGA Tour players. So very impressive. But to do that is to chip in twice in the final three holes of a major championship, to chip in three times in the final round of a major championship and go on to win. I don't know if I can recall somebody else doing that in the men's or women's game. So amazing performance and clutch.
She chipped in for Eagle on 18 to get into a playoff with Brooke Henderson and Nelly Korda, but the 18th hole created a bit more controversy than I think we would have liked to have seen in a major championship, because I guess it was the 72nd hole in regulation, Brooke Henderson smashes a 3-wood, a 5-wood, essentially through the green and into this blue wall. I don't know how else to describe it, Greg. It was essentially constructed to mimic the grandstands in other years where there would normally be fans. This is where they would sit. Although with no fans this year, they have opted to construct and erect this blue wall. Brooke Henderson's ball gets kind of stuck underneath of it. It was really awkward. They were kind of looking for it, and her caddy's on the ground trying to find it underneath there, peeking underneath the tarp. Long story short, she, you know, gets relief. She gets up and down and gets into a playoff, but of course, the Twitter sphere did not like the idea that this blue wall even existed in a year with no fans.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting scenario, and I'm sure they have their reasons for it, and I'm okay. I trust Mike Wan and everything he does setting up golf courses. I think that that he does a great job. So I'm not sure what the purpose was. It definitely creates an interesting scenario, and it leaves you wondering why it's there. So whatever the reasons are, I'm sure they're good, but it definitely created an interesting scenario. But I'm a big Brooke Henderson fan. So her caddy, her sister, Brittany, I actually went to school with her, and she was in our PGM program at Coastal, and she can play too. Let me tell you, she whipped up on all of us just about every time she teed it up. So I was definitely interested in what Brooke was going to do. I was hoping she was going to pull it out, but difficult down the stretch. What'd you make of the blue wall?
This is one of those situations where I probably understand why they did it, where they probably sat down and there was probably a meeting about this, and they said, let's have this event play as if it were a normal year. And in a normal year, there would be grandstands there. Let's mimic it. Let's not change it. You know, these golfers have played here before. But my issue is it's not a normal year. There's really no reason for it. And I don't blame anybody who wants to kind of use it as a backstop. It's there for you. Like, if it's going to be part of the course, go ahead, use it. If that's part of your game plan, unfortunately, it just like, it makes that shot so much different, right? It just changes the way that you play that shot with a giant blue wall behind the green. And I don't know, like, I get why it was there. I don't think it was a good idea.
You know, sometimes with the blue wall, it's easy when you watch TV.
The infamous blue wall.
Yeah. It's easy when you watch TV sometimes to think, oh, well, you just hit a 3-wood instead of a 5-wood and blast it long of the green. And it makes it feel like you're playing 2K21 and you just click, what, R1 and bump up a club and just hit a three. Right? Yeah, just hit one more club. But you're talking about hitting a 3-wood on the 72nd hole of a major to the green. There's a lot of room for error, and there's water short and everything. And so I understand where you're coming from, but I don't think it makes it that much easier. Like there's a kid I went to college with too. So he made a comment that I can't believe he said to this day. And he said, guys, all you have to do is get to the PGA Tour. Once you get there, it's so much easier. You've got fans lining the fairways. You got grandstands you can hit it into. You can't lose a ball out there. I mean, it's so much easier to go low once you get to the PGA Tour. And you just can't believe that he said that, because now you're talking about the misses. Well, oh, it's easier because when you miss, it doesn't get as bad. But you still got to go shoot significantly under par. They're missing maybe once, maybe twice in a round. So the course is the same for everybody. I understand it. I don't think it's that big of an advantage. And I don't think it changes the hole too much. So I give it a pass. I don't make as big a deal of it as everybody else.
I just think it's always a shame. We can move on. It's like, of course it comes into play on the 72nd hole, right? Why do we have to be talking about it? Like, of course it does. That thing could have sat there for 3 months and it never ran into the situation again. Of course it happens on the 72nd hole, which is only unfortunate. So I think it's just bad luck.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from.
Matchup challenge. Kyle Porter, who thankfully is not here to continue his victory lap, continues to be scorching hot. He went 6-0-2 in matchup bets this week, although we were all pretty good. You and I, Greg, we were both 4-2-2. That'll get the job done every single week. Mark was 3-3-2. So, I mean, these are all just fine and dandy. What are we going to do about Kyle? He is whipping our butts in matchups right now.
I don't know. I think Jacob might have to change a couple of numbers or something. We gotta fudge some numbers, because he's scorching 6-0-2. Is that the first week somebody's gone without a loss?
I think it has to be.
I think it is. I mean, maybe Jacob can take a look at that a little later, but yeah, it's impressive. So I tip my cap to him. I don't think we have to take him out at the knees. We'll let this, it's a long season. We'll see how it plays out.
Shout out KP, who keeps his hot run going. And then one and done. So I've got good news. All of us made the cut. We got a little bit of money, although nobody, and also, I don't know if this is good news or bad news. I guess it's good news for all of us. Nobody's going to win all that much. So I've got you, Greg, I've got Mark, and I've got producer Jacob, all with a T29. You and Mark both took Brendan Steele. Producer Jacob took HV3, who, oh, by the way, had a great Sunday final round. Made you a couple, I don't know, $10,000 extra. But what, T29, that's going to get you, I don't know, 50 grand, something like that. You're not going to break the bank with a T29.
No, you're not. So we're basically, this being the first year of a super season, we got 50, we have what, 49 more tournaments.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll be playing one and done in all of them, but there's a lot of golf left to be played, and we're all pretty much still, I call this still an even playing field.
Yeah, we're basically all at zero by the point. KP had Siwoo, who also had a very nice Sunday. Actually, that was one of the most disappointing things, because Siwoo had some of the best rounds of the week. He shot a 65 on Friday, a 66 on Sunday, and that's 77 on Saturday. Just like we talked about it last night, just played himself out of this thing. That's pretty disappointing. He ends up in a T44.
Yeah, that's why Siwoo as a favorite is not really a great bet, right? He's a great long shot, because he can pop up and have really hot weeks, and he can be that stock price that's really volatile. And if you hit it at the right time, there's a huge reward. But for him to be in the favorite role, I think is a tough one for him because of the volatility.
And then I had Joel Damon, T52. So same thing, one of the shorter odds coming in, not getting it done. He just didn't do much all week. I mean, rounds of 71, 68, 71, 70, that's not what we need.
No. But you know what? Do you think there's anybody here that you look at and say, man, there's going to be a week later on where I really wish I could play him?
No.
So this is almost, I'm looking at this, I'm saying, okay, no harm, no foul. Maybe Jacob with HV3. I guess you could see HV3 getting really hot at some point during the year. But, I mean, he's probably not like the, oh, I got to have him. So I'm not sure any of these guys will be missed. No, I call this one no harm, no foul.
T29 got you $41,391, which is a good week, but not in our one and done pool. So we're basically all at zero heading into week two. And Greg, we finished the Safeway Open recap, so you know what we're on to now.
Oh yeah,
it's a major championship week.
Yeah, it's here again. It's September.
It's September. Oh, here's a fun little fact. I don't have it in front of me, but I read that 90%, estimated 90% of the work done at Winged Foot next week will be done in the dark because of shorter days in September and how little daylight they will have as opposed to playing this in the middle of the summer.
Steve Rabideau and his team and the USGA's team, they're going to be up at 4. They're going to be getting going at like 4 o'clock. Which is a real challenge because there's a lot of guys. There's Steve Rabideau, who's the superintendent over there. His official term is his official title, rather, is director of golf courses. And his team, they know how to get around the property. They know where they're going. They can do it in the dark. They can operate in the dark. But you have a lot of volunteers. You have a lot of USGA help out there. It's a significantly larger team that'll be preparing the golf course every day. So it will be a real challenge. And when you're watching the golf course, you're looking at all the beauty. You got to understand the amount of time, the hours that these guys are putting in. Cause it is not just this week, but all year it has been extreme and they've done a great job with it from everything I've heard.
Strap on those headlamps. You're going to need them this week at Winged Foot. Greg, thank you very much for joining me. We are going to fast forward to the U.S. Open to a major championship week. We've got a ton of great stuff coming at you all week long. You can find Greg on Twitter at TheRealGFD. You can find me on Twitter at RickRunGood. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.